प्रव्रजन्तमनुपेतमपेतकृत्यम् द्वैपायनो गरकातरया जुहाव फूट्रेति तन्मयतयोतरवोभिनैरुस्थं सर्वभूत हृदयं मुनिमानतोऽस्मि श्यां सुन्दर शिखन्दशिखा स्मरः सुमुरलीमनोहर राधिकरसिक मम कृपानिधे स्वप्रियचरणकिं करीं कुरु भुक्ताभिनय अपराधलक्ष्य क्षिप्ताश्च कामानि तरङ्गमुद्दि कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपन्न वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम् त्वैवस्मि त्वैवस्मि न जीवामि त्वया विना इति विज्ञाय राधयितं न मां शरणान्तिकम्। First of all, I offer my Sastang Dandavat Puspanjali, my heart like flowers thousands of times, at the lotus feet of Asmadeya Paramaraditam Guru Pada Padma, Om Vishnu Pada Shtotra Sutasisimad, Rupanugacharya Varya Bhaktivedanta Narayan Goswami Maharaj. Secondly, I offer my Sastang Dandavat Pranam thousands of times at the lotus feet of my Sri Rupanuga Gaurya Guru Parampara, and I offer my Pranam to all the Sama Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis Bhakti Kalpati Goswati Vaishnavas. So, this evening, I wanted to take this opportunity to speak a few words about Mungora Arti, because it's something that we try to observe every day, and the conceptions presented by Acharya is not only relevant to Gaura Arti, but to all of our Artis, but specifically tonight I'll focus on Gaura Arti as the example to illustrate the points of our Acharyas. So, Gaura Arti is a ceremony that we attend every day, and as devotees gradually mature in their bhakti, they develop more and more appreciation for this beautiful ceremony and the meaning behind it. It may be that sometimes a devotee who is not feeling inspired might think, or perhaps, oh, we're doing this again, or we sing this song every day, what's so important about this? So it's very important to know the meaning behind what we're doing, because that gives us inspiration to participate in that and really avail ourselves of the great opportunity that is that comes to us each day when we do Arti. So first of all, I want to go back to the very basics and the roots of Arti itself. What is happening here? The curtains open and we have darshan of the deity, and the Arti ceremony is performed by a pujari, a devotee. He's serving the deity and taking some articles and offering them one by one. Why? For what reason?
There. Because you're inviting them there and they're there.
So, now, everyone can't go and offer the Arti. Right? Everyone cannot go. Who can go? Only those who have Diksha. Diksha mantras. It's sometimes called second initiation, colloquially here in the West. But technically, Diksha. Those who have second initiation Diksha, they're allowed to participate in rendering the service of offering the articles to the deity in the ceremony called Arati. Arati means a reception. We're receiving the Lord. In India, if any great personality comes, some dignitary, or even some respectable senior person in your own family, then one might offer these articles. It's a formal, official, and also heartfelt welcome to another person. We know that from this world, and in the same way, puja is offering to the deity and receiving them lovingly. This is a very general approach. Why does one have to be initiated to offer the arati? In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, Text 48, there you'll find a verse. Labdva nugraha archaryat tena sandarshitagama mahapurusham abhyarchen murcha bhimatayatmanaha. It means labdva anugraha acharyat. From the acharya, one should receive anugraha, mercy. One should receive mercy from the acharya. What is the mercy that the guru gives to the disciple? Tena sandashita agamaha. Here specifically described that the spiritual master trains the disciple in the, here he said, sandarshita agama. Aga means tantra shastra. Actually, there are two types of shastra, nigam and agam. Nigam refers to the Vedas, the original Vedas. And agam refers to the tantra shastra. There are about 108 Vaishnava tantra shastras. The word tantra means procedures. In other words, how to do things. How to perform various ceremonies and so on. So the mercy of the guru is that he teaches the disciple how to perform the various rituals given in the scriptures of procedure called tantra. And murtya abhimatayatmana, and he teaches the disciple to worship the murti according to that disciple's individual proclivity, his tendency. In other words, that living entity has an ishtadev, a relationship with Krishna, or it might be Ram, it might be Narayan, but he has a relationship with God in one of the forms. So the responsibility of the guru is to give a mantra which is related to the form with whom that soul has an eternal relationship, and then train that person how to perform the archan and the puja of that deity. So this is the mercy of the guru. So this is why diksha is required before worshipping the deity, because in order to perform the various procedures, you need mantra to perform the procedures. So without mantra given at the time of diksha and the subsidiary mantras, you cannot perform the procedures. So this process of arti and worshipping the deity is all part of the process of diksha. Diksha is not a ceremony that's over in one day and it's finished when you put your banana in the fire. That's not it. Diksha means the process whereby Divya Gyan, transcendental knowledge, is given, and Ksha, all types of sanskaras, material sanskaras, they are gradually eradicated. So it will the process of Diksha will begin when the living entity, when does Diksha begin? It really starts when the living entity is actually following the teaching of the guru and surrendering to the instructions of the guru. That's when it begins. Because even if mantra is given, but the disciple is not following, then it didn't start yet. Right? So, Srila Gurudev describes, when the conditioned soul is following all the prescribed activities given by the guru, hearing, chanting and remembering nicely and carrying out various services. And he also receives mantra from the guru. Now the process begins. And it has matured, his diksha is complete, when the living entity is established in Sambandhagyan. In other words, he realizes the deity of the mantra. He has a darshan. He sees in his meditation the deity of the mantra. Now he's established in Sambandhagyan, knowledge. And after that, now he requires shiksha to make further progress. So this is the process of diksha. So Srila Jiva Goswami Pad explains, in essence, that diksha is the process whereby the spiritual master removes vikshep, that means distraction, from the mind of the living entity. Those who know Yoga Sutras, they will be familiar. In Vyasa's commentary on the first verse, it's described the mind has five stages. First, there is shipta, which means completely distracted. The mind is just jumping like a grasshopper, boing, 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 from one subject to another, and can never stay in one place for more than a tenth of a second. So that's called shipta. Then there's another stage. The next stage is called mudha. Mudha means the mind is so dull that it's just nothing going on. No brain waves, no brain activity at all. So usually the general living entities are going backwards and forwards between the stage of hopping around like a grasshopper and just being complete mental inertia. So the next stage is called vikshipta. Vikshipta means distracted, but not distracted hopping around everywhere. It means the living entity is trying to concentrate and he's somewhat successful, but the mind tends to move somewhere and he brings it back. So he's trying to concentrate the mind, trying to understand the self, trying to transcend the body and the material conception, but he still gets distracted because of the flickering nature of the mind. So that's called vikshipta, the stage of distraction. When distraction is eradicated, the next stage is called ekagrata. Ekagrata means one-pointedness. Now the mind is one-pointed. And in the yoga system, this is called sampragyata samadhi, the first type of trance. And then the final stage is called nirodha, the complete restraint of all the eddies and whirlpools of the field of consciousness. That's called nirodha. Or in the yoga system, asampragyata samadhi. Now, a mantra, in the Brahma Purana, the definition of mantra has been given. Omkaradi samayuktam namaskaranta kirtitam swanama saravasattvanam mantra ityabhidiyate. This is the definition of mantra. Omkaradi samayuktam namaskaranta. There's a name of God. And at the beginning, it's joined to omkaradi, a bead such as omkar. Om, ayin, kling. There are so many beads for mantras. So we have a name, basically, a bead, and namaskaranta at the end, something of offering oneself. Namaskar means na nivritti, I give up. Ma, na ma, ma means aham mameti, me and mine. Giving up the conception of me and mine and surrendering the essence of myself to the deity whose name I am chanting. This is the final part of the mantra, a word indicating prapati, that surrender to the deity of the mantra. So mantras are arranged like this, and then the Gayatri mantra follows each mantra and ends with Prachodayat, a prayer. Oh, I have surrendered to you in mantra, then in Gayatri, Prachodayat, may you kindly, by your causeless mercy, by your own sweet will, fully and completely reveal yourself to me, because I have no way of knowing you. Oh my Lord, you are grace. I cannot know you in any way. Kindly reveal yourself to me. I have no other shelter like this. So, now, if a living entity will remember mantra, what will happen? the living entity will have darshan of God. But there's some small print. And the small print is, as long as the living entity is free from vikshep, free from distraction. If one has an undistracted mind, then the stage will come called dhyan, the stage of meditation. So it said that mantras are dhyanmayi. Mantras reveal themselves in the state of dhyan. But the living entity cannot come into the meditative state because of the restlessness of the mind. So diksha, Srila Gurudev explained that diksha is a process devised by the sages in order to relieve the living entity from his vikshep, state of distraction. This is what diksha is. Because otherwise, Nam would do everything. Everyone just chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Nam can do everything. It's true. But because it's difficult for the living entity to come into a meditative state and to be free from distraction, so Gurudev gives this process, the Acharya gives the process called diksha as a method to remove the vikshep, distraction from the mind. Now, when Guru gives mantra, as we have heard from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna speaking to Uddhav, Ladvanuga Graha Acharya Tena Sandashitagama, along with the diksha mantra, the Guru gives some process of archan, of worship of the deity. And this consists of several things, waking the deity in the morning, putting deity to rest in the evening, and offering prasadam, and give the seed, idamasanam, like this, and offer them seed, wash their feet, wash their hands and mouth, and offer their prasadam, etc. As if you're serving a guest in your home. Very beautiful. And also very prominent is the arti. After offering naivedya to the deity, then everyone can have darshan of the arti. So, in Bhakti Sandarbha, Anuchet 3.1.12, Rupa Goswami Pad says, Jiva Goswami Pad. Tasmineva nana vikshepavati rucha bhavena. Means the reason the living entity cannot concentrate and is distracted is because he does not have taste in what he's doing. If taste would be there, a real thick taste, genuine ruchi, then the mind would not be wandering everywhere. So, the guru engages the disciple in out of taste. He's not spontaneously serving the deity, but he has a ritual to offer this one first, then purify, offer this thing or item, offer that item, offer this paraphernalia, one after another, and by gradually offering all the articles along with mantra, the devotee becomes concentrated. He comes to the state of dhyana or meditation, and he is free from vikshep, free from distraction. Now, there's a much deeper dimension to diksha and to the arti ceremony. We'll come to that now. I want to give an example from Krishna's pastimes. So now, you can think we are not in Los Angeles, but we are going to Dwarka. Dwarka is so opulent. Vrindavan is more opulent than anywhere, but in Dwarka the opulence is prevalent. You can see it. Oh, skyscrapers. We call them skyscrapers. In Sanskrit they're called akashchumbi. Means sky kisses. Because they're kissing the sky so high. They have akashchumbi, huge skyscrapers, everything made from different types of jewels and gold and ivory and lapis lazuli and everything. Very, very opulent place. And Krishna is living there with 16,108 wives. Each has their separate palace and many maidservants. So one day, Narad, he came to Dwarka. Narad used to very much like to go to Dwarka, you know. Narad had been cursed by Daksha that he could not stay in any place for more than a few days. But the Dwarka was such a transcendental place protected by Krishna that he could go and stay there for as long as he liked, because the curse of Daksha reached everywhere but it couldn't enter into Dwarka. So Narad, he went to Dwarka and he wanted to have the darshan of Krishna. So when he arrived in one palace, he wanted to see Krishna but he couldn't. Why? Because Krishna was asleep in bed. So then he came out from that palace, and then he went to another palace, and he went into that palace and saw Krishna wasn't sleeping there. He was awake and he was playing dice. He was gambling and having fun with a dice game. Then he looked, and Krishna looked up to him and said, "Oh Narad, my pranam to you," and received him very affectionately and very respectfully, because Narad is a great sage. So after being received by Krishna, Narad left that place and he went to another palace. When he arrived in that palace, Krishna, he was cuddling his children and playing with his children. So when Narad came in, then Krishna looked up and said, "Oh Narad, when did you arrive?" As if he'd never seen Narad in the previous palace. And Narad just became stunned. He couldn't move. He's thinking, "Why? I just spoke with Krishna. Now say, oh Narad, when did you arrive?" And without saying anything, then Narad left. Then he went to another palace, and there he saw that Krishna was just about to take a bath. So he left and he went to another palace. In that palace, Krishna was seated among so many brahmanas and yajna was going on. So then Narad came out of that palace. He was so intrigued. He's got 16,108 to visit. He went to another palace, and there he saw that Krishna was feeding brahmanas, distributing mahaprasadam to brahmanas. And then he went to another palace, coming out of there, and Krishna was... brahmanas there had already been fed, and he was taking their remnants, taking the remnants from their plate afterwards, because Krishna is very respectful to the brahmanas. So then Narad got up, went to another palace. In that palace, Krishna was doing his midday rituals. He left there, he went to another palace, Krishna was sitting and remembering Gayatri Mantra, doing his Gayatri, meditating. So then Narad, he didn't want to disturb him while he was doing mantra. And Narad, he left, he went to another palace. There Krishna was practicing martial arts. He was fighting with swords, he was and shields. He was riding on the back, sometimes on horses, sometimes on elephants, and sometimes riding on chariots, and he was practicing his various martial arts needed for the battle. So then Narad came out from that palace, and he went into another palace. Krishna was fast asleep. He came out from that palace, went to another one. Krishna, in that palace, he was with his ministers and having a meeting and consulting with them. Narad looked, and Narad, Rishi, he could not get enough of this. What is going on? Again he went to another palace. There he saw Krishna was doing Jalkeli, playing in the water with his queens, water pastimes. Narad, again, he left. He went to another palace. Krishna was donating cows in charity. Then Narad went to another palace. Krishna was sitting down with his family members and listening to a sadhu reciting the Puranas. Krishna was listening very carefully to the Puranas, setting good example for everyone. Then Narad came out, went to another palace. Krishna was alone with the queen and laughing and joking in a private place. So then Narad came out of that palace. He went into another one. He saw Krishna was serving his Gurujan. He has his seniors, like Vasudev, Ugrasen. He's the emperor of the Yadu dynasty. Krishna's not the emperor. He gave Rajtilak to Ugrasen and said, "I am your citizen and I am your servant." So very humble. So then Narad went to another palace, and Krishna was having a meeting with his generals, and he had the maps out and they were planning battles, and also planning battles with certain kings, and they wanted to negotiate peace with others. So a whole political meeting was going on with his generals and strategists. So then, now he'd left, he went to another palace. There Krishna was making arrangements for the weddings of his sons and daughters, arranging for them to get married. So then Nard came out of that palace, he went to another palace. So when he walked into this palace, he was looking around, he couldn't see Krishna. He could see some ministers were together and they were having a meeting. And then just as he was looking around for Krishna, then one of the ministers came past Narad and said, "Shh, shh." And Narad looked and he couldn't recognize who it was. Then he looked again and that minister said, "Shh, don't tell anyone." And then Narad said, "Oh, it's Krishna." Krishna was doing an undercover secret mission. He was disguised himself as a minister and going and overhearing the meetings of the other ministers just to make sure everything was in place, no one was being a double agent, no one was an informer, no one was planning some mutiny or treason against the government like this. And so Krishna was going to Narada, "Shh, shh." And Narada had to really check himself from laughing, because in one sense it seems quite absurd, because God is God. And Krishna's the Paramatma in everyone's heart. Why does he have to dress up in disguise and sneak around the palace trying to overhear everyone? Right? So this is obviously a very sweet Naravat Leela. It means a human type of pastime. So Narada had to check himself from laughing. Oh, how joyful and wonderful are the pastimes of Krishna. And he was thoroughly amazed. And he also knew, he could understand that the citizens in any palace were totally unaware that Krishna was present in any other palace. Everyone thought Krishna's only in our palace. But Narada went from palace to palace and saw that Krishna was everywhere. Now a question comes. Srila Jiva Goswami Pad in Krishna Sandarbha Anuched 173, he raises the question, why was Narada amazed? Why?
Because Sri Krishna was able to separate himself in 16,108 forms, and each of him, of those personalities had an entirely separate existence, conversations, leela.
Well, actually, even the pure, not mystic yogis, but pure devotees, they can also be with Krishna in so many different places at once. So even though it's astonishing that Krishna, it's especially astonishing that he's remembering Gayatri Mantra, being the Supreme Lord, and that he's sneaking around dressed up as one of his ministers. That's astonishing. But the main thing, here's the real point, because we're all familiar with this pastime from Srimad Bhagavatam. But Jiva Goswami...
None of the devotees knew?
No. Jiva Goswami is bringing out this point, and that is that Krishna was doing yajna. That is in the morning time. It's a morning pastime. When Krishna is feeding brahmanas, that's a noon pastime. Also sword fighting practice, that's also done in the midday. Sleeping is something, and speaking privately with his wives, that's something that he does at night. Giving cows in charity is a morning activity. Listening to the Puranas is an afternoon activity. Meditating is also is done in the Brahma Muhurta. So it's indicated that when he was meditating, it was actually the Brahma Muhurta there. So the thing that really struck Narad is not that God himself has so many forms, but Dwarka itself, the Dham, has many, many prakashas, many manifestations, and all time zones are present at once. You see, Narad wasn't just going from... You see, if you have Dwarka, and there are 16,108 palaces in Dwarka, he wasn't going from palace to palace within the same prakash where Dwarka is. But Yoga Maya was allowing him to move from one prakash of Dwarka to another prakash of Dwarka to another one. You understand? Parallel Dwarkas, in which the time is different in every parallel Dwarka. You understand?
Prakash
means a manifestation. Yeah, a manifestation. So Jiva Goswami, commenting on this pastime, he said, Tadevam Vrindavanasya Tavat Prakasha Beda Udhariyante. That just as in this pastime, Dwarka is not a place only with 16,000 palaces, and he was going to 16,000 palaces. What shocked Narad was that by Yoga Maya, he was actually going into different Prakash. It's called Prakash Bed. Separate prakosts, separate chambers of Leela, where the time was completely different. In one place it was day, night, Brahma Muhurta, noon, evening, like this. And it was only a few minutes in between each place he was going to. You understand? So this is what really surprised Narad. So that pastime is there in Srimad Bhagavatam, but ordinary people, if they'll read it, they can't understand. It takes great acharyas like Srila Jiva Goswami, who have realized these things, to allow us to enter into the mystery of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the reason Srila Jiva Goswami is discussing this is because he wants to show that the dham in which Krishna performs pastimes has many, many parallel manifestations or prakash. Now, the Nitya Leela, or the eternal pastimes of Sri Krishna, are divided into two types. One is called Mantrupasanamai Leela Peet, and the other one is called the Swarasiki Leela Peet. The word Peet, like not pit exactly, but pit means like a prakash, similar, not exactly, but it means a seat or a location. So two types of leela, the Swarasiki leela pit and the Mantrupasanamayi leela pit. What's the difference between them? The Mantrupasanamayi leela pit is an eternal seat of pastimes. It's an eternal seat of pastimes. And there Krishna is situated among his associates, but they don't move to another location. They never change location. It's a dimension, it's a particular prakost which is eternally existing, and Krishna is there with his associates accepting their service, but it never changes location. This is called Mantrupasanamayi Leela Pit. Now the significance of the word Mantrupasanamayi Leela Pit means it's the Leela Pit which is accessible through the method of Mantropasana, worshipping, Upasana, with mantras. So it's called the Mantrupasanamayi Leela Pit. The dimension of Leela which is accessible by worship through mantra. Now the other Leela Pit, Swarasiki, is not accessible by Mantrupasanamayi.
I have a question now. So the first Leela Pit is kind of a linear, is it a more, a the people involved in that are in a linear kind of a Leela, so to speak, while when Narada Muni was in Dwarka, it was non-linear. He would go from different times, different space.
Yeah, he was going from prakash to prakash.
Prakash,
yeah.
In a non-linear form.
But what we're dealing with here, still, Narada is even far beyond this Mantrupasanamayi Leela Pit. And give an example of a Mantrupasanamayi Leela Pit from a verse we all know. Divyad Brindaranya Kalpadrumada Sri Matratna Garasingha Sanasto Sri Sri Radha Srila Govinda Devo Prastalibi Sevyamano Smarami. Means, beneath a desire tree in Vrindavan, upon a jeweled throne, Radha Govinda are seated, accepting the service of their Sakis. Prastalibi means the Ali, means the Sakis of Radha and Krishna are serving them. So this is one Mantrupasanamayi Leela Pit, and there are many Mantrupasanamayi Leela Pits. Upasana means worship. Well, actually, literally, asan means a seat, and upa means nearby. So upasana, which is the word we use for worship, literally means to sit nearby Supreme Personality of Godhead. Worship means to get close to God, literally, upasana. Nishad means sit down, Upanishad. That's so similar, Upasana, yeah. So, here, this is Mantrupasanamayi Leela Pit. Now, to understand it clearly, we should look at Swarasiki Leela Pit. oh, I'm thinking in Brahma Samhita also there's a verse, you know? Alola Chandrika Lasat Banamalya Bhansi Nagara Keli Kala Vilasam Mangalalitam Niyata Prakash. Yeah. Shamam Tribanga Lalita Niyata Prakash. Niyata means eternally, and Prakash means manifest. Shamam Tribanga Lalitam Niyata Prakasham. Shama Sunda is present there, standing in a threefold bending form forever. Right? That's what the verse said. Now you might think, well, that's not a fun pastime. Standing, you know, in a threefold bending form forever. Yeah? But do you know a form of the Lord that stands in a threefold bending form forever?
Deity.
Exactly. Exactly. You see? I remember once one devotee, I won't mention his name, he was saying, Gurudev, there was a pastime I think it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the world, the devotees were crying, "Ha Mahaprabhu, where are you?" But this devotee was saying, but they have the deity of Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu and the deity is non-different, so if Mahaprabhu leaves, they've got the deity, so no difference. This devotee was saying. And then why would they, why would the devotee be crying when Mahaprabhu leaves if they've got his deity and the deity is non-different? Why? Because, yes, the deity is Mahaprabhu, or the deity is Radha and Krishna. But where? In Mantra Pasana Mai Lilapit. Shamam Tri Banga Lalitam Niyata Prakasham. Understand? So, Haribo. Now, the Swarasiki Lilapit is a lila wherein the location of the pastimes is changing. For example, in Astakalya Lila, Krishna wakes up in a kunj, perhaps Sanket, and then Radha and Krishna return, Krishna leaves and goes to Nandagaon, Radharani leaves and goes to Yavat, then Radharani wakes up and then she takes bath and then she leaves for Nandagaon, Krishna gets up and he goes for milking the cows at Terakadamba, they see each other momentarily on the way, Radharani cooks, Krishna returns, takes his bath, takes breakfast, then Krishna leaves and goes for cow grazing. Radharani returns to her home. Radharani makes an excuse to go and worship the sun god and goes to Suryakund. And then Krishna goes to graze cows at Govardhan. Then they'll meet at noon at Radhakund. So this lila, which is changing location, going place to place, this is Swarasiki lila. So this lila is not accessible through mantramayi upasana. So that is called Swarasiki. When one is established in his own rasa, Swaras, established in his own rasa, then he can access that lila. But Mantra Pasana Mai Lila Pit, that is accessed through the process of mantra. And the very form of Krishna in the Mantra Pasana Mai Lila Pit is the deity, manifest by the guru. So the process of giving the Diksha Mantra and the methods of worship is to connect the living entity with an undistracted mind with the Mantra Pasana Mai Lila Pit, because that is the point of entrance into Krishna Lila. You can't break into the Astakalya Lila or the Swarasiki Lila. The point of entrance into Krishna Lila is the Mantra Pasana Mai Lila Pit. Now, these two Lila Pits are related to each other. How are they related? Just like Jiva Goswami gives the example of the Ganga. If the Ganges is flowing, then suddenly it comes to a very wide part. Then what happens? It looks actually like a big lake. And it seems as if the water is not moving anywhere. It just looks like a big lake. But if you go to the other side, then you'll see that the other side of the lake, where it goes narrow again, now it's flowing. So similarly, the Mantra Pasana Mai Lila Pit is like the lake. And the Swarasiki Lila Pit is like where it's narrow and flowing. It's the same Krishna, actually, and the same pastimes, but one seems to be still and one seems to be flowing. So if one will enter a broad lake-like part of the Ganges, if one will go into that deeply and gradually make one's way to the far end, what will happen? Then you come to the flowing of the Ganges, where it begins to flow quickly again. So Jiva Goswami Pad explained in Krishna Sandarbha 153, Sakalu mantrupasanamai tvaipi swarasi kyameva paryavasyati. It means that when one's mantrupasanamai, meditation on the mantrupasanamai lilapit becomes mature, it turns into swarasiki. So the entrance into the Nitya Lila of Krishna is first to enter into the mantrupasanamai lilapit, and then from there one can, when it's mature, one has a mature realization of that particular lilapit, then one can then be drawn into the flow, really and literally drawn into the flow of the Astakali Lila, the changing of locations and the eternal lilas of Krishna. So
I had a question on in the teachings of Kapila, he talks about the deity, mm-hmm. deity worship,
mm-hmm.
and then he says that it's imitation until you see, unless you realize that I'm in everyone's heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a stage before it flows into the movable leelas?
Yeah. Kapildev would be, first of all, speaking mainly about an Aishwarya conception towards Lord Narayan, being the all-pervading Lord in everyone's heart, etc. He will speak about that. He also speaks about he does speak about spontaneous devotional service, and that when the living entity, his consciousness is purified, surely he can see how all the living entities are equal, and that they're part and parcel of God, and that everything is within God. This is true.
But
when he's doing the meditation, when he's doing the service of the deity, he never thinks in terms of this world. This is the important thing that we have to know. You see, the giving of the mantra and the performance of arti is to introduce us into Krishna's world, not to introduce Krishna into... We're not trying to bring Krishna to Los Angeles. We're trying to get the Los Angelinos to Vrindavan, right? I mean, including ourselves. That's what I'm trying to say. So the very preliminary conception of God is very worldly-centered, and we think of Krishna in terms of this world. But the whole point of a guru giving a mantra to the disciple and engaging him in the worship of the deity is to invite that living entity into the mantrupasanamaya lilapit. So an example that I feel is very graphic and easy to understand here is that, you know, if there's a website, it has so many different pages, but if you want to surf that website, look around on that website, the first thing you have to do is go to the home page. You have to log on. So similarly, you can't break into Krishna's pastimes. First you have to log on to Krishna's home page. And so that's what Diksha is. Diksha is getting the disciple logged on to Krishna's home page. That's the start. Initiation means the beginning. The beginning of what? The beginning of one service to Krishna in his spiritual world. So at that point, in regard to the relationship with Krishna, one will see Krishna in our sampradaya as a cowherd boy, as the beloved of Radharani. And as far as all pervading lords are concerned, that's Lord Narayan's domain. And that's Krishna's father, Nanda Baba, worships Narayan every day. But those who are in that particular Divyad, Brindaranya, Kalpadrumaha, they will realize themselves as being among those Sakis serving Radha Krishna, seated upon a jewel throne. And so when we worship the deity, then that is the chance. The guru is creating the chance that all the senses will be absorbed in the service of Krishna, related to the entrance point to Krishna's eternal lila, the mantrupasanamai lila pit, without any distraction, because there's a whole ritual with so many mantras that gradually induces, that brings the living entity towards dhyan, meditation, and ultimately towards samadhi, to trance as well. So the service of the deity, the archan, the giving of the diksha mantra, they are all part of the diksha process to bring the living entity to the spiritual world. Man means mind, And tra means to deliver. In English we have the word transport. So mantra is how the guru transports the disciple to the entrance point into Krishna's lila. In Brahma Samhita, there's a verse which is indicative of the Swarasiki lila. Do you know? Chintamani prakarasadma sukalpa vriksha lakshavriteshu surabhirabhipalayantam Lakshmi sahasra satasam brahmasevyamanam govindamadipurish. Venam kanantam aravinda. This is Mantrapasnamai. And the next, Ananda, Alola Chandrika, Lasat Banamal Yavangsi. These are Mantrapasnamai. But this one, Chintamani Prakarashadma Shukalpa Briksha, this is Swarasiki Lila. Why? First, the Sadma means the houses in Vrindavana made of Chintamani. Then, Surabir Abhipalyant and Krishna's grazing cows. Now, you can't graze the cows in the house. So that means that in the first line, Krishna was at home. In the second line, he went grazing cows. In the third line, Lakshmi Sahasra Satasambra Masavya, he's accepting service from all the goddesses of fortune. Here it means the gopis, of course. So he can't accept service from all the gopis while he's grazing cows with the boys. So here in one verse, so this verse is for the Swarasiki Lila, it's changing, the pastime is changing location, location to location. So now, there's a very interesting thing. By serving the deity and by observing the arti, then one has a chance to enter the Vrindavan Yogapit. Now what's happening in the Vrindavan Yogapit? Well, the Sakis are offering arti. And that's why we offer arti to the deities of Radha Krishna, because we're actually having the chance to participate in the eternal pastime that's going on in the Yogapit. That's the Mantrapasnamaya Lila Pit. There, the arti and those types of services to Radha Krishna are going on forever. So morning, noon and night, when we remember mantra or we perform arti of the deities, that Lila Pit is open 24/7. The Swarasiki Lila Pit, if you go to Govardhan in the morning time, there'll be nothing going on because Krishna's in Nandagaon, right? And if you go to Nandagaon at lunchtime, then there will be no one there because Krishna will be a Radhika. So in the Swarasiki Lila Pit, there's a movement. But the Mantrapasnamaya Lila Pit, it's always there. It's open 24/7 for the living entity to log on. That's the entrance point to Krishna's Lila. Now, Vrindavan is a very difficult place to enter. Ordinary sadhaks, even after doing sadhan and bhajan for thousands of years, it's very hard for them to realize Vrindavan. Yadyapi samadishu vidirapi pasyati natava nakagrama richam. Rupa Goswami said, even Lord Brahma, in his samadhi, he cannot see the rays coming from the toenails of Krishna. So Vrindavan is very hard to enter. Then how will we, being not so qualified as Brahma, I dare say, how will we be able to enter even into the Mantrapasnamaya Lila Pit of Vrindavan?
Grace.
Where is the grace available? So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained that the Mayapur Lila Pit, the Mayapur Lila Pit, there the pastimes going on are called Udbodak Lila. Udbodak Lila. Udbodak means awakening. In other words, the pastimes of Mahaprabhu in the Mayapur Yoga Pit do Udbodak. They awaken the realization of the Vrindavan Lila Pit. That's the process. Otherwise Vrindavan would be very difficult to understand, very difficult to realize. So by meditation on the Mayapur Yoga Pit, then it will cause a spontaneous awakening within the heart of Vrindavan. And that is why Nartam Das Thakur wrote that song, what? Guranga Guneti Jure Nittalila Taraspure Sayajana Bhagati Adhikari. How do you get Adhikar for Bhakti? Oh, by appreciating the qualities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, what's it like in the Mayapur Yoga Pit? Srila Janachandra Goswami has written some verses describing the Mayapur Yoga Pit. What did he say? This is from his Gauragovinda Archan Smaram Padati, text 42 and 43. So it's in Sanskrit, but you'll probably be able to easily translate it back into English or even Bengali if you're here. There he's written a description of the Mayapur Yogapith. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Then we'll begin. Tanmadye Shri Gaura Chandram Bame Shri Lagadadaram Tadakshine Avadutendram Srila Advaitam Tatasmaret Tadakshine Srinivasam Smaret Sri Panditottamam Smaret Sri Bhakta Brindancha Chatur Diksha Suvestitam. He's saying, in the in the Mayapur Yogapit, Mahaprabhu is seated upon a jewel throne, a Ratna Singhasan, and on his
right
side is Dakshine Avadutendram, is the king of the Avaduts, Nityananda. On his left side is Gadadha, and here is, on the right, Advaita Acharya, and this side, Srivas Thakur, Srivas Thakur, the best of pandits, etc. In other words, this song that we sing, Ki bajayo jaya gora chande aruti ke shoba janavita tabone jagamana loba. All glories to the arti of Gaur Chandra upon the bank of the Janavi, the Ganges, in transcendental Mayapur. Jagamana loba, awakening the greed. Greed for what? Greed for the service of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Awakening greed in the heart of all the living entities. Dakine Nitai Chan. On one side Nityananda Prabhu, Bame Gadadhar. The other side Gadadha Pandit. Nikate Advaita Shuni Vasa Chatradara. Advaita is here and like this. And Srinivasa Chatradara, Srinivas is holding an umbrella. Vosyati Gora Chand Ratna Singhasane. And he's sitting on a jeweled throne. Janachandra Goswami gives a description of what kind of jewels are on the throne and where, what the backrest is made of and the legs. There are eight legs actually on the throne. The backrest is made of lapis lazuli, and he describes the whole thing. That's another lecture. So, and Arati Korena Brahma Adi Devagane, the demigods headed by Brahma are offering Arati. Narahadi Adi Kori Chamaradulai, etc. And he's describing very beautiful Artic ceremony. So every evening, when we do Gaur Arati, it's not just one of those rituals that the Hare Krishnas do, but rather, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and our acharyas are inviting us to participate in a very intense meditation upon the Mayapur Yogapit. That is the point of entry into Gaura Lila, the Mantrupasanamai Lila Pit of the Gaura Lila. And then, by meditating deeply upon that, then what will be the result? It's the Udbodak Lila. So when the Gaur Arati comes to an end, what happens? The whole Mayapur Lila Pit transforms and becomes Jayo Jayo Radha Krishna Yugala Milan Arati Karaye Lalita Disakhi Gan. One becomes transported from the Mayapur Lila Pit, Yoga Pit, to the Vrindavan Yoga Pit of Radha and Krishna. And this is the purpose and necessity and power and potential of our Gaura Arati that we perform every day. Very wonderful, profound, mystic ceremony, allowing the living entities to log on to the very inconceivable, inscrutable, almost impossible to realize pastimes of Krishna through the Mantrupasanamaya Lila Pit of the Yoga Pit in Mayapur. This is the meaning of Gaura Arati. So, now it's quite late. I haven't begun explaining the actual Arati, but that was the introduction to the meaning of Arati. And perhaps I think in our next class, we'll go through the verses one by one and discuss how is it that we meditate as we're singing these songs. For example, we have verses such as Narahari Adi Kori Chamaradulai. So what does that mean? Narahari Adi Kori Chamaradulai. You know?
Well, he's using the chamara to worship the Lord.
Yeah, it means, but there's something here. Narahari Adi.
He's qualified.
Yeah, Adi means, not Adikari. It's Adi Kori. Kori means to do. And Adi means Narahari, etc. In other words, not only Narahari, but there's a whole group of people with him as well. Who are they? This is the question.
Huh?
But whom? Because then we have Sanjaya Mukunda Vasu Ghosh Adi guy. Then we have other devotees led by Vasu Ghosh. Vasu Ghosh Adi, they're singing. So who's the party of Vasu Ghosh and who's the party of Narahari? Etc.
Narahari is the Saivites, the Pujaris, I don't know.
So this is why. If we go into this deeply, who are the associates of Narahari and who is Narahari, what's his relationship with Mahaprabhu, then when we sing the Gaura Artik, we can all become lost in meditation and all vikshep, all distraction will go away, and then the meaning of the mantras and the kirtan will be revealed within our hearts. This is the process. So I think in the next lecture, we'll discuss all these meanings of Galadeshi, Bonamala, Kali, Jhalama, Shiva, Shukana, Radha, etc. All of these things. Very beautiful katar. And that will be in the next lecture. So, Gaura Artik ki jai! Srila Gurudev ki jai! Srila Jiva Goswami Pad ki jai! Sriguru Parampara ki jai! Satchidananda Gauri ki jai! Gaura Premanande! So, I guess we'll honor a little prasadam, and some devotees want to go and have a kirtan now at the yoga school. And so, yeah, good idea.
Is it at 10, did you say?
Quarter to 10, 9:40 we should be there.
9:40 we should be there. So it's only 5 to 9 now, so we can honor some prasadam and go. I'd like to mention a few things. Last night, program was very nice. Those of you who were there know how nice it was. After the program, I spoke with Shiva Ray. She's the principal, so to speak, of the yoga school there. She's very influential, very famous in the yoga community. And so I wanted to know something about her background, and so we were discussing. And her background is in Kashmiri Shaivism. And so when I heard that, I became very inspired, because the Rasa tradition has a very intimate connection with Kashmiri Shaivism. In fact, just as Shankaracharya is almost all pervasive in the world of Vedanta today, so similarly, Sri Abhinavagupta, who was very famous, perhaps the most famous Kashmiri Shaivite, composed a book called Abhinava Bharati, which became the almost all-pervading influential shastra on rasa. Very, very influential. And so there's a great point of commonality between our sampradaya and the tradition that she and the teachers in her group, they're coming from. So we know that Vaishnavana Mita Shambhu, that Lord Shiva is a great Vaishnava and he's very merciful, and he collects living entities and brings them to the lotus feet of Krishna. We see in Brihat Bhagavatamrita how the Brahman, he received in a dream the deity of Durga initiated him in mantra in his dream, and he began to chant it, and gradually he became a pure devotee, pure Vaishnava. We see that the four Kumaras, they were also meditating on Nirvishesh Brahman. But they, by smelling the tulsi offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, their hearts were changed. Prakashananda Saraswati, Prabodhananda Saraswati, Prakashananda Saraswati and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. they were already liberated by virtue of their sadhan in their particular path. And by a little loving, compassionate association, at once they became very high class Vaishnavas. Hmm? The very first chapter of Jiva Dharma. The first chapter of Jiva Dharma. One Shankarite sannyasi is doing meditation and he heard the Kirtan of Mahaprabhu. His heart became attracted and he became a very high class of Vaishnava. So there are many examples in the Vedas, in Gaura Leela, and since Gaura Leela also, how the living entities who have followed the path, maybe somewhat impersonalism, how they were very easily transformed and became superior to many devotees.